Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are. Shalom Aleichem, Assalamu Aleichem, Namaste, Pak Sat Nam, Sat Sri Akal, Tashi Dalek, Han Ho Lila Tanya Wase Yake. May everything be well with you as it is with me. And now I will, as I do every day at the beginning of our shir, I will recite the Kaddish for the dead and the mourners of the dead. So please close your eyes as you listen and remember someone to whom you are close, who has died, passed away. And in doing so, you'll honor that person's life and bless his or her memory with the light of your own consciousness. Yishkadal v'yishkadash me rabo, bolmo di vero kirase, v'yamlik melkase, b'kayakon, uvyo mekon, uvkaya dekol bis Yisrael, ba'agalo uvizman, koryev ve'imru omen. Yehesh me rabo mavorak, le'olam ule ome omayo, yisbarak ve'yistabak, Ve'yisparar, ve'yis romam, ve'yis nase, ve'yis hadar, ve'yis ale, ve'yis halal, shmeidu kacho, beraku, leolo, minkol, berkaso, ve'shoroso, tushbekoso, ve'nekamoso, da'amiron, be'omo, ve'imro, omen. Yehe shlomo rabo, min shabaya, ve'kayim olenu, ve'alkol, yisrael, ve'imro, omen. Ose shalom bimramov, Hu yashe shalom oleinu ve'alkol Yisrael ve'imru omen. Thank you very much. And check the recording levels here. Make sure that we're still recording, and we are. We, as you know or may not know, but you will after I tell you, we record all of these shirim and rebroadcast them later in the evening, and so that's why I'm checking the recording levels here. Now, we've been talking about Maaseh Merkaba, the workings of the chariot, or the work of the chariot. Both are good translations of that word. Workings of the chariot, or work of the chariot. The work of the chariot is what we're talking about here is Merkaba mysticism, and the work of the chariot is that the mystic works on gaining a vision of the chariot, which would be the workings of the chariot. So they both, Maaseh Merkaba, translated as either work of the chariot or workings of the chariot, is appropriate in either translation. And of course, as we talked about before, this is the word that's used to describe the attempts of the mystics to achieve a vision of the chariot and the throne of God, and if fortunate enough, of God himself. And the chariot we're talking about is the chariot that Ezekiel talked about in his vision of the chariot in the first chapter of the book of Ezekiel. So the purpose was to obtain a vision of the throne of God and actually to get onto a chariot, a metaphysical chariot, to build one out of light and to put one's consciousness onto that chariot and to have that chariot carry you upward into the celestial chambers, the seven heavens of the spiritual worlds, and there to into the four different worlds. In the world of Asiya, which is the world of action where we're at, to carry you up from the upper levels of that into the world of Yetzirah, which is the world of formation. That's the world of the heavenly choir of angels. And then from there into the world of Berea, the world of creation, which is the world of the throne, where all those angels are gathered round. And standing next to that throne are the archangels. On the right would be the archangel Michael, and on the left would be the archangel Gabriel. And then Above that, of course, is the world of the king who sits on that throne. And that would be the world of God. And that's absolute in Kabbalistic terminology. Okay, so we've talked about all those things before. Now, what we're going to talk about today is we're going to start talking about the methods and practices that the Merkaba mystics used in achieving this higher level of consciousness, this altered state of consciousness. There is a Kabbalistic saying that goes like this: in order to ascend, one must descend. In order to ascend, one must descend. And so oftentimes, when the Merkaba mystics were talking about the work that they do, the work of the chariot, they described it as descending into the chariot, descending on the chariot. Okay? So in order to ascend, one must descend. What does that mean? That means that one must cut oneself off from the physical body and the temporal world and go deeply within oneself. There are a number of methods to accomplish this. So what we're talking about is eliminating our focus and awareness on external things, on the world outside of us, and turning our focus inward and going deep inside of us, or as the Merkaba mystics describe it, looking into one's heart, into the chambers of one's heart. And inside there, you will see the seven chambers of the upper worlds. Okay, now how does one do this? There are a number of methods to accomplish this. Essentially, what we're talking about is meditation and contemplation in modern terms. But there's a number of these methods, a number of different types of meditation. Okay, the first one we will call structured externally directed meditation. Structured externally directed meditation. There's different ways of doing this. One of the methods that the Merkaba mystics used was either silent or vocal chanting of a series of divine names a prescribed number of times. Now, this is similar to chanting, in modern terms, a mantra, like Om Mani Padme Hum. That's a Buddhist mantra. And one can if one recites a mantra over and over again and focuses one's attention on the recital or the chanting of that mantra, then what it does is it focuses one's concentration on this series of words and sounds, to the exclusion of sounds and sights external to our bodies and our minds. And so instead of chanting a modern mantra, the mantra in those days of the Merkaba mystics would be a series of divine names. What I mean by that, I mean by names of God. And in fact, there's one formula in which a certain set of divine names is chanted precisely 112 times. Okay, so this is one method of externally directed meditation. Now, this is going to be as opposed to unstructured internally directed meditation, which I'll get into in a minute. Okay, so another method in the overall category of structured external directed meditation, in addition to chanting a series of divine names a specific number of times, is just contemplation. It's another type of meditation. Contemplation means focusing one's attention on an object or a diagram. One thing that is often done is focus on a candle flame, staring at a candle flame. And another one is staring at a diagram, and with respect to the Merkaba mystics, it would be probably specifically one of the things they would use would be commonly was the tetragrammaton. That's the that is the four letters of God's divine name, which consists of, in Hebrew, Yod, He, Vov, He. And you can write that, instead of writing it horizontally, as in the Hebrew language, you can write it vertically, with a Yod at the top, and then a He, and then underneath that, a Vov, and then a He. And if you're familiar with those letters, you can recognize by looking at it that it forms the figure of a human body. The Yod forms the head, the He forms the shoulders and arms, the Vov forms the trunk of the body, and the He, the bottom He, the lower He, forms the pelvis and two legs. And so when the Merkaba mystic focuses on that, he's actually focusing on the name of God, on the most divine name of God, most hidden, unknowable, as far as a meaning goes, name of God, but is also focusing upon God's divine form. Now, how do I know that God's divine form looks like a human body? Well, because God told us in his Torah, in Genesis, I think it's 1:26, he said, "Let us make man in our image." And then says, "In our likeness, in our form and likeness, or in our image, made he them. Male and female made he them." So we're told that we were made in the image of God. And what that means in the image is that there was a prototypical, or let's make it even better than prototypical, let's more accurate, is archetypal. An archetypal form that resembles the form of God. But God doesn't have a body, you would say, and you'd say that rightly. That's right, God does not have a body. But if God were to have a body, it would be the one that he created as the image for man. This archetypal image for man, by the way, image in Hebrew is tselem, and it is often referred to, or is understood as like the astral body of each human being. But the prototypical archetypal image that's referred to in Genesis 1:26 and thereabouts is called Adam Kadmon, primordial man, primordial Adam. Adam means man in Hebrew, and Kadmon means primordial. The first made before any others. First in terms of number, in ordination, meaning numbers, the first numbered man. And that does not mean the Adam whose side a rib was taken and then Eve was made. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about the primordial image in which God made the first man and woman. And it's in that image that all of us are made, even though all of us are unique. We're all unique, yet we all are similar, and it's that overall primordial image of man that we all adhere to and conform to. Okay. So that image is made up of the four letters of the divine name of God, the tetragrammaton, Yod, He, Vov, He, arranged vertically. Okay. A third method of structured externally directed meditation was developed by, I'm not going to say it was developed for sure by the Arizal, Rabbi Yitzchak Luria, because I believe this is probably all of these techniques probably go back way, way back, and the Arizal, the great Ari, the great lion of Kabbalah, lived and taught in the 1500s of the Common Era. And the time period we're talking about is going back into the times of the Talmud and before, which go all the way back to the time of the great sages, which would be in the first century on each side of the change in reckoning of time. So it'd be like 1 BC or before the Common Era, or 100, the first century before and the first century after. So first century before Common Era and the first century Common Era. And this third method is was named, though, by the Arizal, Yekudim, meaning unifications. Yekudim, unifications. And in this method, what the mystic would do would be to focus on a mental image instead of an external diagram, like a drawing, or mandala, which is a type of drawing. The image would be a mental image, and it would consist of divine names. And in the process of meditating on these things, the mystic combines those names, unifies, and that's what this is why they're called unifications. Combines, starts with a divine name that's at a lower level in the structure of God in the Godhead, and then goes up and first of all, the mystic brings that name in and focuses on it very intensely in the mind, and then once the mystic has done that, the mystic takes that name and raises it up and combines it with the divine name at the next higher level, and these two names are unified, and so on and so forth as the mystic works his or her way up through the levels of and stages of the manifestation of God's name into this world. Okay, those three are all structured, externally directed meditation. There's another category of meditation that's called unstructured, internally directed meditation. Okay, this includes focusing on the thoughts, images, and feelings that arise in the mind spontaneously. And this is one that I can talk about because it's one that I practice most often, the one that I do most often. And in this method, what one does is one, of course, always gets in a quiet place where one's not being disturbed. You do that with any of these forms of contemplation or meditation. And you close your eyes and you let thoughts and images just float to the surface of your mind. In fact, if you listen to my Shabbat meditation, prayer meditation class on Saturday mornings or afternoons, depending on where you are in the world, this is the method that I described there. You don't try to focus on an image or a thought. Instead, you just go kind of passive in your mind, and you let whatever thoughts and images come to your consciousness that will come. And as I've described it, it's as if your mind is the surface, your consciousness is the surface of a pool of water, which is your mind. Your consciousness is on the surface, and beneath it is your unconscious. And rising up out of that unconscious are thoughts, images, and feelings, and when they break the surface of the mind or the consciousness, it's like something rising up out of the water and breaking the surface of that pond and or that well. And then when it does, you become aware of it. It means it enters your consciousness. So you become aware of a thought or an image or a feeling. And when you do so, you don't run with it. You don't say, okay, now I'm going to focus on that. You just go, yes, yes. And then it drifts off. And it's okay. You don't try to hold it. You let it drift off. And then pretty soon another thought comes up. And at first, maybe all kinds of thoughts are coming up. And that's because you're still in the mode of what I call the rabbit mind. It means that you haven't stilled your mind, calmed it down to where it's not doing what it always does, which is responding to all the stimuli coming in through the five senses, as well as the internal stimuli rising up from the unconscious, because you really have a sixth sense there. It's not, your mind is processing not just the things that come in externally from the outside, but also the things that are inside your personal unconscious, and that's where you stuff things down that you don't like to think about or want to deal with, which is a form of psychologically we're talking about where you repress certain ideas, thoughts, and events and memories. That's the personal unconscious. But there's this, and that's just a very small part of the unconscious. Then there's the collective unconscious, which is the great sea. That's the divine mind that we all share. And that's where all the archetypes of the collective unconscious that Jung talked about reside. It's where all mythology comes from. It's where all storytelling originates. All legends have their origins there. And that's where God resides. Not that God's a legend. No, not at all. But it's the divine mind. And so you let these thoughts and images come up. And one way that I do it is I focus on, and when you close your eyes, and I ask you to do this right now if you're listening, just as a little thought experiment. Just close your eyes right now. Continue listening to what I'm saying, but close your eyes. And if you have to, put your hands over your eyes so that you block out the light coming in from your room so that you can get it as dark as possible on your eyelids. And you'll notice right away, if you haven't noticed before, I'm sure you've probably all noticed this, that even though you close your eyes, you still see, your eyes are still functioning. What you're seeing are the little tiny, against a black background, you're seeing little tiny specks of light of all kinds of colors. Most of them, in my experience, most of those colors are forms of yellow or orange, but there's also blues and greens and reds, many colors, and these lights are tiny and they blink on and off. But as you're watching this, and this is the meditation method now that I'm going to talk about, just start focusing on these lights. And just let those lights be as if they're stars against a night sky. And just start focusing on the lights and start trying to go into those lights. And as you're doing that, you'll see that you can't really focus on any one of them for very long because they move around and they blink in and out. They're replaced by new little lights. And you'll also notice that it's not just little lights that you see, that you'll see things that almost look like clouds of gas in the night sky, like pictures of telescopes, like the Hubble telescope takes of different gas nebulae. You'll see like sheets of shimmering light, like the aurora borealis, or a gas cloud seen through a telescope out in the universe far away. Well, just allow these things to happen and just go with them and just try to go deep inside and try to continue going back. And then what will happen when you do this long enough, and you've done it for a number of times, enough number of times, it's probably not going to happen the first time you try it, what will happen is pretty soon you'll start getting images that come up of things that do reflect things in our external world, in our external reality. But these are thoughts that are coming up in image form. And then that's when you can say, ah, okay, yes, I see that. And then it'll go, and another thought will come up. Okay, this is a method of meditation that's unstructured because you're not focused on anything in particular, and it's internally directed to inside of you, not outside of you. Okay, now sometimes the spontaneous thoughts, well, another method you can use is when you have thoughts come up and they come up in the form of verbal thoughts. You can, or even feelings, or even images. Say that you don't have verbal thoughts, but what happens is you have a verbal response to the thoughts. Like I said, yes, I understand that. Well, what you can do is go to the next step. And this is what many of the Kabbalists do, and that is to verbalize those thoughts in the form of prayer. Okay? So what you do basically is you begin to pray, and the content, the words of your prayers are the verbalized form of the version of the thoughts that are rising up right then into your mind. And you direct those thoughts in the form of words and prayer to God inside you, to God above, however you want to envision it. Okay, that's a form of meditation. Okay, and then there's even a third form of meditation that is not practiced very much. It may be the most difficult form. It's called non-directed meditation. And in this form of meditation, what you try to achieve is a stillness of the mind in which you have withdrawn from all perception. What you're doing is striving for that level of consciousness that I mentioned in our last class that's called ayin. Ayin, remember, means nothingness. Ayin is the level of keter, and it's called nothingness because no words can describe it, no images can be drawn of it. And so there's no way we can really contemplate of it, and so therefore it's really nothingness, and that's the root of all wisdom. Remember, that's the source. Keter is the source of chokmah, wisdom, and keter, another name for that is ayin. And in Proverbs, it tells us that from nothing comes wisdom. Wisdom comes from nothing. Okay? So what we're doing is striving to reach what's known as chokmah consciousness, the level of consciousness known as ayin, where the soul is cut off from the mind. So in all the other forms of meditation, what you're trying to do is cut your mind off from the body and the external world. And that's hard enough to do, but not nearly as hard as this ayin type meditation, where not only do you cut the mind off from the body and the external world, but you cut the soul off from the mind so that you have no thoughts. You just enter into nothingness. Okay. Other methods and practices that are included in the work of the chariot. Another form is just intense mystical prayer. There's different ways of praying, and I will read a passage that describes that to you. Intense mystical prayer. And then other things that are done is asceticism. That this goes with these, it's a part of these methods and practices. Mortification of the body and its appetites. That's what asceticism is. Means that you fast, you don't eat for a number of days on end, and you sometimes it's accompanied by intense physical work. Now, what comes to my mind right now is an analog of this in Native American religion. In my relatives, in the Modocs, I am adopted Modoc. I don't know how many of you. I don't know if I've actually mentioned that in these classes, but I have been adopted into the Modoc tribe by my Modoc spiritual teacher and father, Miller Anderson, whose uncle or great uncle, I forget which, I have to look again at his genealogical chart, was a famous shaman for the Modoc tribe in the late 1800s, at the time of the Modoc War, named Dr. George. And anyway, in Modoc mysticism, when a man or a woman well, mostly in the Indian cases, and mostly at least in the Modoc tribe, most of the people who went for images went for visions were young men, crying for a dream or crying for a vision. And what they would do is they would go out on a mountain. So here's a similarity I taught with Judaism that I talked about yesterday, right? Going to the high desolate place, the desolate height that Balaam went to, that the prophets went to, that Moses, the greatest of all prophets, went up on the mountain. Okay, well, the Indians did the same thing, the Native Americans. And the Modocs, in specifically, which I know about, they would go up on a high, bare mountain by themselves, and they would fast, not eat or drink anything, for as much as 4 days or 5 days. And that's not all they did. While they were there, they piled rocks into rock cairns. They made rock cairns. And you can go out today and you can find places in Modoc country where you'll come upon a place and on a hillside or up on the top of a hill especially, and you'll find big piles of rock, like maybe 2-3 feet in diameter and 5 or 6 feet high. And it's really old because all these rocks have lichens and moss growing on them. They've been there for hundreds of years. And so this is a form of asceticism. It's called mortification of the flesh. What you're doing is you are putting the body, the physical body, in stress, in physical stress. You're depriving it of water, depriving it of food, and then you're putting it through hard physical labor. And when you do this, it lowers the power, it decreases the power of the body to bind the mind and the soul to it. So in essence, what you're doing is you're helping to cut the bonds between the mind, the soul, and the body, which if you can cut them, and you don't want to cut them all the way because then you'll die. So that's not the goal. The goal, though, is to weaken those bonds so that with meditation and contemplation. And what do? The Indians chant prayers. They sing songs to the Great Spirit, which is another name by which Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh is known to another people in a different time and place, is the Great Spirit or the Great Grandfather, and or Great Father, or Great Mystery. These are all names that the Native Americans have for the same God that we worship. They worship the same God that the Jews worship and that the Christians worship, because there's only one God. There is no other. And we're taught this in Torah. Shema Yisrael, Adonai, Eloheinu, Adonai Echad. That's the first verse of the Shema. Means Shema Yisrael, hear Israel, meaning people of Israel. Adonai Eloheinu, meaning the Lord is our God. Adonai Echad, the Lord is one. We have to constantly be reminded of this. There's only one God, and he's the same God that has made his revelation, has revealed himself to all cultures and all times. It's the one true God. Okay. Doesn't matter his name. Okay, so anyway, through asceticism, through mortification of the flesh and the body and its appetites, then we can loosen those bonds that hold our souls and minds tight. And then we can rise up. Now, I told you I was going to make a quote from the Talmud on this, and I'm going to do that. Let me see if I can find this here. See how hard it's going to be for me to go to where I want to go. Okay, it doesn't look like it's going to be too bad. This is concerning meditation. Maybe it is going to be hard. I guess it would help if I got the right book. Yes. All right. Okay, here we go. Okay. This first thing I'm going to read you is from a commentary by Rabbi Hananel ben Huzshiel. It's hard for me to say. Okay. Who lived between 990 and 1055 Common Era. So this is over 1,000 years ago that he lived. And here's what he says. In the Hekalot, okay, that means palaces or chambers. And that's an alternative name for Merkaba mysticism. It's called Merkaba mysticism or Hekalot mysticism. Because where you go when you get on the chariot is you go up and view all these chambers or palaces of God. Okay, so here's what he says. In the Hekalot, it is explained that sages who were worthy of such undertakings would pray and purify themselves of all uncleanliness. They would fast, immerse themselves in the mikveh, and purify themselves. Then they would make use of various names and gaze into the chambers on high. There they would see how the watches of angels stand. They would see how one chamber follows another, and what is in each chamber. Okay? Goes on. And now this is a quote from the writings of Haigeon, who lived between 938 and 1038, a contemporary of the last mystic we were reading. And he says, many sages maintain that one who possesses all the necessary qualifications has methods through which he can gaze at the Merkava, meaning chariot, and peek into the chambers, that's Hekalot, on high. One must first fast for a certain number of days. He then places his head between his knees and whispers into the ground many songs and praises known from tradition. From his innermost being and its chambers, he will then perceive the seven chambers. In his vision, it will be as if he is entering one chamber after another, gazing at what is in each one. Baruch Hashem. So both of these accounts by practitioners of Merkava and Hekalot mysticism, being the same thing, cite the same thing as methods and techniques for obtaining this vision. And the first thing that it says that you do is you have to purify yourself of all uncleanliness, and you do that by fasting for several days and by immersing yourself in the mikveh. The mikveh is a body of water, and of natural water, which it can be either like a spring or a lake or a river or an ocean, as long as it isn't water like in the form of a reservoir that's been artificially created by a dam, making a dam. Okay, and you go to that mikveh, and if you are Christian, if you've been raised in a Christian tradition, that's known as the baptismal, not font, but the baptismal pool that some churches have up behind the altar. Some of the fundamentalist Christian churches, like Baptist churches and some of the other ones, like Foursquare Gospel and stuff, they have a baptismal tub up behind curtains, behind the podiums where they preach from, at the front of the church. And then they'll have, when they have a baptism, then everybody will still be in the church, and they'll open up the curtains, and the person who's being baptized goes and walks down into the tub, and so does the minister, and then the minister baptizes them. Well, where that came from is from in the four Gospels, when in the River Jordan, the man named Jesus was baptized by John the Baptist, who was baptizing all kinds of people. Well, what was he doing? He wasn't converting them to Christianity. He wasn't converting them from heathenism, paganism, or anything else, to being Jews even. What he was doing is he was purifying people who were already Jews in the River Jordan. That is a ceremony which of purification. So that's where the Christians get it from. Okay, and so that's a part of this method and practice to get a vision is fasting and then purification in the mikveh. And then once you do that, then you begin to use the meditational techniques. The first sage tells us that these people recited various names with a capital N, meaning divine names, or reciting the names of God. And then they would get a vision in which they saw into the chambers. And then they would progress from one chamber to the next and see what's inside. The second sage, Haigayon, says the same thing about the fasting and the purification. But then he says that his description of the method used is that the mystic places his head between his knees and whispers into the ground many songs and praises known from tradition. Now, this is a form of meditation in which a person assumes a certain posture. The mystic assumes a certain posture. And that posture essentially is that you sit on your heels, kneeling. You're kneeling down onto the floor or the ground with your legs underneath your buttocks. And then you lean forward and you spread your knees to allow your body, your chest, your stomach and chest, to pass between your knees, and you place your face and your head on the floor or the ground. Now, if you don't do that all the time, I can tell you, even if you try doing that all the time, that's a very uncomfortable position to maintain for very long at all. And so it's a kind of an extension of the asceticism and mortification of the flesh that we were talking about earlier. You're going into a very awkward and uncomfortable posture or position. And this helps to focus your mind. And then what does the Haigayon tell us that the visionary does? He, while he's in this position, whispers into the ground many songs and praises known from tradition. He doesn't reveal to us what they are. He says known from tradition. What's tradition? Tradition is what's now known as the Kabbalah. It means mystically known. Has to be passed on from teacher to student. Okay? Let me check our time here. And we've gone long enough for today. So that's going to conclude today's lesson. Tomorrow we'll get into describing more of what people encounter as they enter these chambers, hekalot or palaces, what it is that they see, these mystics see. And listen, I want to make this clear too. What I'm talking about isn't something that happened a long time ago and can't happen or doesn't happen today, because it does. All of these techniques have been incorporated and been handed down from teacher to student through circles of disciples, and I'm handing this down to you now. And this still goes on today. Now, you may not want to be looking for a vision of the chariot or of the chambers, because that has changed a little bit now with the evolution of Merkaba mysticism into Kabbalah, Kabbalistic mysticism. But the techniques are still the same. They're still the same. So this is all valid. What I'm teaching you now is valid for today. And this is something that you can use. This is a form of practical spirituality. You can go right now and begin to employ what I've told you in this class right now today. And begin to work on the practical side of your spirituality. Okay, as I said, this concludes today's teaching, and today's class will be rebroadcast tonight at the same location in this room at 10 p.m. Eastern Time, 7 p.m. Pacific Time. And then our next live class will be at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 4 p.m. Pacific Time on this upcoming Monday. So I hope you see you then, and And in between now and when I see you next, I ask that you remember God at least twice, and may you go from strength to strength, Zygesund.